I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England,
Case Profiles Edition.
Hello, welcome back to another mini episode.
We are so, so happy to have you here on another installment of our Case Profiles, where we highlight cases of people of color in New England whose stories that are just tragic do not get nearly any media attention. Our goal here is to bring that attention as much as possible in any way as possible as we can.
Absolutely. And of course, cases of people of color in New England, most of the cases we cover are unsolved. And I feel like a lot of that is because of the lack of attention, whether it's from the media, whether it's from law enforcement. And the way that we do this is different, of course, from our full episodes. It is where we tell each other and you guys about these cases. So Liz researches her separately, I research mine separately, and then we come together and we are hearing each other's for the first time along with you guys. So any exclamations like, oh shit, wow, that's crazy. No way. That's all real. That's all legit because we genuinely are hearing it for the first time along with you guys. We have had people reach out to us and be like, you guys are just doing that to be dramatic. No, there are genuine reactions.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that is unique to our mini episode format.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's cool that we can learn about this along with you guys. And of course, we have not heard of this.
Right.
Because they are so swept under the rug. So that is all the more reason why we are doing this and why we are telling these stories. And because it is an even number episode today, and I went first last week, Liz is going to kick us off this time.
Absolutely, Katie. Thank you for that great introduction. I'm happy to be here. I got a really messed up story for you today. And I'm on it again. I have another solved case for you today.
No way.
Yes, I had one last week and I feel like 8 weeks prior to that. I don't know what it is. And like I explained on our last case profiles, I just pick names from the list, search them up, see if I get enough hits to cover in an episode. If I don't, I put it up to the side and say, okay, maybe this just has to be a website, an Instagram post, and that's it. And then I usually find out if they are solved or not.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, lately, might have all been solved. That's okay. We still cover the ones that are solved, and we still want them to get justice. This one also happens to be located in Vermont.
Okay.
I covered one in Vermont several weeks ago.
Yeah.
Which was one of like three. It's not very common, mostly because Vermont is historically super white. So this was exciting to get into, mostly because it's just, you know, bringing more awareness to the fact that there are people of color in Vermont and crimes still happen there. So this is important to cover, even if it's solved. So today, Katie, I will be telling you and our lovely, lovely listeners about the murder of Marcus Austin. My sources today are three. I have an article from the VT Digger. I have an article from Times Argus. And I have an article from LoHUD. And they were all great resources for me. I learned a lot about this man who seemed wonderful. Marcus Austin, who was 33 years old at the time of this terrible incident, was a well-loved member of the community and had been for a very long time. He was formerly a White Plains high school basketball star, and he led his team to the 1999 state championships just as a sophomore. He then went on to be the Vermont High School's all-time leading scorer with 1,295 points.
Damn.
Yeah. As far as I know, he still holds the record to this day for that high school. Following high school graduation, Marcus went on to earn a Division I scholarship to Eastern Michigan, scoring 1,425 points during his four seasons, which is the fourth highest on the college all-time record list. So he did great in high school and then improved at college. Division I, that's fantastic. He was great, a great basketball player. He even went on to play professionally for the American Basketball Association for a team called the Vermont Frostheaves, who unfortunately no longer exist. However, he did help them win two league titles while he was there.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, what an awesome name for a basketball team.
That is so Vermont.
So Vermont. The Frostheaves? Come on.
Either that or like the Maple Leaves.
Yes, right. I love it. It's great. Marcus, besides his intense basketball talent, was also known to be quiet and easygoing, as well as caring. After his basketball career, Marcus became a mental health specialist at Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital. I know. What a nice, smart, caring guy.
Wow.
I know. Not only was he dedicated to helping those with mental illness and was said to be a great, caring, and thoughtful coworker, but he was said to have been a wonderful and dedicated father to his young son. That was his identity. It was like, dad first, basketball star second, mental health care worker second too, you know, like that was just didn't matter because it was his son first always, which you gotta always love and respect people like that who put, you know, most people do put their children first and that's great.
Yeah.
You see people who don't. I see that at my work and that's terrible. So I always have the most respect for people who everything else, you know, their children, it's their children. So I was reading that and I was like, oh my God, he was this great basketball player. And then he turned, his son. Oh my God. He sounded like such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, on January 22nd, 2017, at around 4:30 a.m., in Montpelier, Vermont, Marcus Austin was shot dead in front of his apartment building. According to police, thanks to witness testimony, the story of the motivation behind Marcus's murder was due to a fight in Barry, Vermont, the night before. According to those witnesses, Marcus and some friends were at a bar when they saw a man named Javian Caballero and his friend at the same place. Now, whatever, this didn't seem like a huge deal. Everyone was there, it was a bar, whatever, drinking, whatever. Everyone started leaving at last call, and for whatever reason, a verbal altercation broke out. According to Marcus's friends, a couple of girls in Caballero's group were yelling at them, provocative things, to be specific, and so a fight broke out between the two groups. Apparently, Marcus was also a part of this altercation, and at one point, he had Caballero on the ground. It was then that Caballero's girlfriend jumped onto Marcus's back, which caused him to turn around in surprise. In defense, he struck her because he was surprised, like turning around with, what's on my back? And in the process, he hit her. Then the fight slowed down. Everyone went home, including Marcus and this friend. But apparently, this friend kept getting calls to his cell phone from Caballero, who kept saying, quote, Big Mark hit my girl. It's not over. So however this fight started, unclear. It sounds like it was because Caballero's friend group was yelling nasty things over to Marcus's friend group for whatever reason. Maybe there was history and whatever. And then when this fight got physical, Marcus, I don't know if Caballero attacked Marcus first. Maybe it was Marcus to Caballero. However it was, his girlfriend jumped on Marcus's back and he had no idea what was happening. And so just in the element of surprise, he was like, whoa, what, what? And just happened to strike her, probably because he was like, who was on my back?
Yeah.
It sounds like it was not intentional. And even if it was in defense.
Totally. Totally. That's fully by surprise.
Yeah.
Fully in self-defense.
Yeah.
And it's like, Big Mark shot my girl. How about you get your girl and tell her to not get involved in physical fights?
Right. Right. It's like, come on. And then he was, so that Caballero, he was calling this friend of Marcus's like over and over and over again, like, it's not over, it's not over, like, watch out. This friend said that Marcus was anxious to go home because they had all went to this friend's house and he didn't feel safe from this Caballero character. He felt like he was being threatened from these phone calls, and his friend offered him a gun for protection, was like, do you want to take a gun home with you, like, to keep yourself safe? And you know, Marcus denied it because he was like, this is a bad idea. Like, I appreciate it, but no, like, it's not, it's going to make things worse. And then those events led to the discovery of Marcus being discovered outside his apartment.
Wow.
So, I don't know if him having the gun would have made any difference. Who knows? Marcus may not have been the kind of guy who would have felt comfortable with a gun. Maybe he would have had it, you know, to show and be like, yeah, look, I can fight back too or whatever. But even if he did have it, he might not have used it. Regardless, Caballero clearly had an agenda. And just because he couldn't control his girlfriend and let her leap on the back of people and as a result have her knock over, like, come on. That's, I can't. At the scene, a cigarette butt with DNA matching Caballero was found, an arrest warrant was executed, and it wasn't until May that Caballero was arrested after he was tracked down to Florida. Yeah, so they found him, and I'm honestly very impressed with the police work here because they were right on it. This happened in February, and he was found in May, so it's very quick. And to pick up a cigarette butt nearby, awesome. In October of 2020, with a trial that had started and then been delayed thanks to COVID, and we all know it, Javion Caballero was found guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. And hopefully that is where he will rot forever.
Wow. And I'm sorry, what else screams guilty as fuck other than fleeing the state and hauling ass across the country, essentially?
Yep. Literally straight down to Florida.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know what? He didn't even hide that well because he was at his parents' house. Like, the police knocked on the door and it was his sister that opened up. And they're like, is your brother here? And she was like, yep. He's in his room. And then he walks out and he's like, yeah. Like, yeah, you dope idiot. And I just think it's so stupid. And I feel, of course, because he was such a good dad and a nice guy. And it sounds like it was just a bad situation. And, like, everyone was probably drunk. And it sounds like truly he was fighting with Caballero. And whoever instigated who, it sounded like when he hit his girlfriend, it was really not intentional. Even if it was, he still should not have been murdered.
Agreed. Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so sad. That is so just uncalled for.
So uncalled for.
It's really just so sad when there's such stupid circumstances around the loss of somebody's life.
Yeah. Yep. Always. Makes me so mad. But yes, that is the murder of Marcus Austin. Star basketball player. Great dad. At least he's got some justice for his family. Now, what terrible story do you have for us today, Katie?
I will be telling you, Liz, as well as our lovely listeners, about the disappearance of John Butran.
Great.
I have 5 sources today.
Wow.
I had the last case profile, too. That's crazy. Normally, we don't have that many.
Look at this. That's nuts.
I have information from FBI.gov, MissingPersonsCenter.org, NBC Boston, MassLive.com, and Unresolved Mysteries Reddit thread.
Nice.
28-year-old John Tran was last seen on April 5th, 2005, at a party in Randolph, Massachusetts, at a home on Mitchell Street. It was genuinely like he vanished into thin air. There is no report on what he was last seen wearing, what time he was last seen. There really is not a lot of specific information about this last night.
Mm-hmm.
John was born in Saigon, Vietnam on November 11th, 1976, and he became a U.S. citizen after immigrating with his parents to West Covina, California. In the summer of 2004, John had moved from West Covina, California to Dorchester, Massachusetts, so that he could attend Quincy College as a part-time student.
Nice.
He was a liberal arts major, and he wanted to write screenplays.
Oh, nice.
Really cool. He lived on Church Street in Dorchester and was working at a pet store in Quincy, Massachusetts.
My best friend. I love it.
John was a great guy, loved animals, loved his job, loved going to school, loved that he had that opportunity to go to school. And he, one of the things that kept coming up was that he was known to donate blood to the American Red Cross on a regular basis. Like, he was meticulous about this.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And he was often seen riding his bicycle carrying a dark colored backpack.
Hmm.
His best friend, Chen Wen, said that John was someone who was caring and very giving, like would give the shirt off his back to you.
Yeah.
They actually grew up together, and John was able to move to Massachusetts because Chen was already living there.
Oh.
So it was really nice for him to move. He moved across the country, but he had someone really close to him that could help him, you know, get established and introduce him to people and kind of show him all the spots around town. And like, it was really, really nice.
That is nice.
Chen said in an interview that John's disappearance has been difficult, especially as he was essentially the last person to see him before his disappearance. He stated, quote, it's very difficult knowing that John's out there and not knowing where he's at or what happened to him. It's very difficult.
Mm.
We need closure, basically. John's never left my mind. He's always been in my heart, and I've always thought about him since all this has happened. A search was done of a Randolph, Massachusetts home in October of 2021, and authorities spent 2 days digging up the backyard of the home.
Whoa.
No new evidence was found, although police did say that they were looking for specific evidence, but they couldn't say what it was.
Huh.
And they also said that they thought that this home in Randolph was related to, or someone who had lived there or was living there was suspicious.
Hmm.
In relation to this disappearance, but they couldn't really say much more than that because it was so recent.
Interesting.
The investigation is ongoing, which is good news that it has not slowed down after all these years. And the FBI is involved, which is really, really cool. Like, things are gaining traction.
Yeah.
John is a Vietnamese male with black hair and brown eyes. And at the time of his disappearance, he was 5'4" and 130 pounds. His disappearance has been classified as suspicious. The FBI is offering a reward of up to $10,000 for anyone with any information leading to the whereabouts of John Butran. Anyone with any information is asked to please call the FBI Field Office Boston Division at 857-386-2000 or 1-800-CALL-FBI. Tips can also be submitted online at tips.fbi.gov.
That is so troubling. When you literally don't even have, like, okay, here he was, and then literally don't know what he was wearing, don't know where he left from, don't know that, like, they have nothing.
They, all that came up was, like, he vanished. He was at this party, people were saying something to him, like, hey, John, how's it going? How's work or how's school, whatever? And then he disappeared. But it's also like, what are you talking about? No one at this party could tell you what he was wearing. Nobody at this party could tell you, hey, I think he went outside to ride his bike at 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, what do you mean you don't have a time in which he was last seen? What do you mean you can't remember what he was wearing?
I find that hard to believe.
Correct.
Did they interview everyone at that party?
That's what I'm saying. And his poor friend, too. Like, I can't imagine the guilt he's feeling. Like, he helped John move across the country to Massachusetts, saw him. I don't know if he was at the party that night himself, or, but it seems like he was one of the last people to see him.
Yeah.
And he's doing all that he can. He really can't help any more than he already is.
Right.
Oh, my God. Like, I really feel so bad for his friend. Like, I really, really sympathize with him.
Yeah. Sounds like he's trying to keep his memory alive as best he can. And he is. And that's so tragic. Mm-hmm. I just can't believe, like, it's so hard to believe that they're not exhausting every possible option from that party that night.
Right.
To not even be able to pinpoint, like, clothes.
Right. And I wonder if, like, how they dug up a backyard in 2021.
Where'd that come from?
Right. So I really am hoping that we'll have more information, hopefully sooner rather than later, about this case, because it is still ongoing,
right?
Which is great. Like, it doesn't seem like they closed it and then reopened it. It seems like it's been open the whole time,
which is considering it's been over 15 years. I mean, it's been almost 20.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll have some answers soon.
Yeah. That's so tragic. Poor guy. It's so sad too for his poor friend, like the fact that he was able to come over here for him. I think he should not feel guilty. You know, it's such a hard thing to say because, like, he's gonna. But he was able to get him over here and offer, like, a nice comfort of familiarity in an unknown location. So it's nice. It's awful. Ugh. Well, guys, we want to know what you think, of course, about these cases. And we also want to know if you have cases of people of color in New England that you want to send to us. You can send them to us on our Instagram account, TrueCrimeNE. You can send them to us via email, TrueCrimeNE@gmail.com. Or you can head on over to our website, go to our contact page, and send us an anonymous or non-anonymous submission through our submission tool, where you can give us all the details you want. You can just give us a name. We'll look into it. We are happy to get any suggestions at all.
Yes, and do not be deterred by the lack of information. Some of these cases have one article, some have like one paragraph, because even if we do not talk about it in verbal, vocal format on a mini episode, we will still do an Instagram post, put it up on our website, so that we are still getting these cases out there in some capacity, so that we are not just back at square one, or really square zero, where these cases are not being talked about at all. Do not let the lack of information deter you. Send them our way. You would be surprised at what we can do with a little bit of information.
Absolutely. And with that, We'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Bye.